Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
All right, what's up, Dolphins fans? Another episode, preview edition of Week 3 against the Buffalo Bills, our first home stand. And to bring it back with us this week, I've got Max Himmelrich from TheDeepEndMiami.com. What's up, Max?
How's it going?
It's going, man. Just seeing how this game is going to progress, seeing what's going on. Obviously, we got a lot of questions. Obviously, we've not played what we wanted to, the way we wanted to the last 2 weeks. But let's. I'm gonna let you start it off with some injuries, because we went from one of the healthiest teams in the league to quickly one of the most injured in a couple weeks. So, what can you tell us about what's going on with these injuries for Week 3?
Well, yeah, what are the two positions that are going to get injured if your offensive line is bad? Running back and quarterback. Tannehill's banged up, but I mean, he's pretty regular. I mean, I think we all remember 2 years ago, and last year he kind of dealt with a knee a little bit, and he always played. Tannehill's a tough guy. He was a full participant all week. He'll play. Lamar Miller looked a little bit dicier earlier in the week. He was a limited participant today, which is a good sign. Previously, he was not participating. So it looks positive for him. Other guys who are trending in the right direction would be Jordan Cameron and Cameron Wake. Jordan Cameron with a groin was not participating earlier in the week, like Lamar Miller is now participating. Cameron Wake, we all know he's been hobbled by injuries for 2 years now. So, you know, you kind of have to put him in the category of guys who are limited in practice all the time. Rashad Jones is one of those guys. Mike Pouncey is. So right now, Rashad Jones, Mike Pouncey, and Cameron Wake are all limited participants. But, I mean, I wouldn't be worried about Jones and Pouncey. So I think that we should be okay. I think all three of them should be playing. The only guys I would be a little bit concerned about are Brandon Albert, who has not been practicing, and Jordan Cameron, who has an injury history, but his injury history is with the head. He hasn't suffered groin injuries before. So this is it should just be a tweak. He should be okay, but I would still worry with a player of his history.
So what do you think we're going to do this time when Albert, let's say Albert doesn't play? I mean, are we going to put Fox again? He got eight alive, or we're going to try Dallas Thomas? That's really our options, mostly.
I'm kind of a proponent of one of two strategies, either just throwing Fox in and leaving everyone else where they are, or, I mean, potentially, I know Dallas Thomas looked bad last season at right tackle, but he looked pretty decent in the preseason at left tackle. You know, it's possible we put him at left tackle, then slide Jameel Douglas over to left guard, and then Pouncey at center, and then
Turner
at right guard, and then Juwan James. But I don't want to do that. I'd like to keep the guys where they are, because that's where we ran into problems last season when we started mixing everything up. I think that we should lock Juwan James in to his spot, because if we start moving him around, it's just going to mess up his development even more. So I'm a big proponent of leaving Juwan James there and then just kind of throwing Jason Fox in at left tackle and just seeing what happens. I mean, against the Bills, Tannehill's going to get killed anyway. But there's no way to stop that defensive line. And then looking at Buffalo's injury report is actually interesting too. LeSean McCoy is fully participating today, but he's still slowed down by the hamstring injury. He's still listed with that. Percy Harvin didn't practice on Wednesday. Thursday, he practiced with a hip injury. And their team just looks a little bit beat up. I mean, Tyrod Taylor has a chest injury. He's been fully participating, but when you look at the team, they're not perfectly healthy either. I think the Dolphins have more guys who kind of came out of the game last week. I think it was an emotional beating as well as a physical one. I think it was hard for guys to fight their way back into that game. So I would look for everyone to start for the Dolphins except for Brandon Albert.
You're saying just go ahead and ride with Fox again, even as horrible as that looked. And I'm not sitting here saying I disagree. I'm just saying, it feels like, like you mentioned that Dallas Thomas looked decent at left tackle in the preseason, but so did many other players on our team. And that hasn't exactly worked out.
There isn't that much that's worse than the way Brandon Albert's been playing at left tackle either. Brandon Albert's been bad.
That's true. They rushed him back, man. Let's just face it.
They didn't rush him back, but they had to. And I mean, half of Brandon Albert is still better than whatever else we have.
Apparently so. I mean, Fox definitely showed that. So, right. I mean, what do you think then? They're going to have to strategize. Let's say Albert doesn't play. They put Fox there. They're going to have some additional strategy besides let's spread it out, go five wide and block five, you know, put five blockers there. What are they going to do? They're going to leave in Miller? Are they going to keep the tight end there? What do you think?
Lamar is going to have to be pass blocking, and it's a little bit troublesome because the Dolphins don't use a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
So given that we don't use a fullback, we don't really have someone who can consistently go up in there and chip and allow Lamar Miller to still run routes. Lamar Miller is going to have to be a pass protection guy. And Deion Sims was a limited participant. If Deion Sims could play, that would be a big boost for the team because he's a pretty good blocker. So if we could keep Deion Sims in there and help him double block with Jason Fox, I think we have a better chance. But the other thing is you can't double block two guys. And we kind of want the double blocking over there to help Juwan James with Mario Williams, who we know has absolutely owned the Miami Dolphins since he arrived in Buffalo.
Yes. And he owned us when he was in Houston. I mean, let's face it.
Well, that was frequently. But, I mean, now that he's in the division, I mean, I don't know that there's a player Tannehill's been sacked by more. I think I read that stat last year that Mario Williams sacked Ryan Tannehill more than any QB has been sacked by any one player, I think was the statistic. But I'll have to check on that.
I agree. What about – see, this is why I hate having two tight ends on the 53. It just drives me nuts. I mean, it just limits our options as far as running a couple extra tight ends and leaving in some blockers, doing some different things. I mean, if it's not in your offense, it's not in your offense, I suppose. But I've been so against it from the first minute, and now between injury and needing to find a way to help block some, and it just feels like all the way around it was a bad decision. I mean, I get that if they had three good ones, they'd have kept three good ones on the 53. I assume we're supposed to fault them for not finding a third tight end that was worth being on the roster, but we really should because it's their job to find enough guys to roster. The fact that they only found two is just kind of ridiculous. And now it's just in so many ways it's hurting this team and hurting this offense right now, in my opinion. I don't know if you feel the same way or not.
I'm not necessarily as despondent about it as you are, but I think, it wasn't optimal.
No.
It definitely wasn't optimal.
Nah, it's just weird. I wonder if I envision, and I didn't look this up, but I should have because I've been so staunchly against that decision from the first minute. I wonder if there was any other team in the league that only rostered two tight ends.
By the way, I found it. There's it's 8.5 sacks of Ryan Tannehill by Mario Williams alone in their six games.
Wow, that's a lot, man. 8.5 sacks. That's like. 0.5% of all his sacks. No, I'm just kidding. That's probably like 7 or 8% of every sack he's taken since he's been in the NFL. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just guessing.
He's got a nice imprint of Mario Williams on him.
If you do the math, because usually I'm good at, that's probably about 5%. Because if it's 8.5 and he's gotten sacked about 135 times or something.
Yeah, I mean, last season there was that one game where Dallas Thomas was playing at right tackle, and back to the injuries. I don't know that I'm so – I think they would have made a move this week had Jordan Cameron been unlikely to play.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would have had to promote – Tim Semish.
Yes.
From the practice squad. They would have had to bring him up, and they haven't yet. That indicates to me that either Jordan Cameron or Deion Sims would play. I believe it could be both, but I don't think there's any reason – for them to rush back Sims. I think they could let Deion Sims wait until after the bye week, especially because Stoneburner played okay. So if Stoneburner was, dropping passes all over the place, then it would be a different story, but he looked okay. And so I'd be totally fine with Stoneburner for two more games, and then bringing Deion Sims back after the bye week.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I just what about putting two backs in the backfield at once? I don't know that I've seen us do that once.
I wrote that in my article earlier this week. If anyone wants to check it out on deependmiami.com, I proposed five schematic changes that the Dolphins could make. And one, I made it more in a way of providing rushing yards, but I really think the team should run the pistol formation a little bit more with Damian Williams as an offset back because he's a bigger guy, he could pass protect, and Lamar Miller behind Tannehill, you know, in the pistol. And I think it would work well with what Bill Lazor does, and I think it would give us flexibility because, one, you could pass block with one of them. Two, you could shift one of them out like a receiver and use them like that. And three, you could run the triple option where Tannehill has a choice of both running backs and keeping it himself. And or throwing it, you know, everything. He could do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
But I think we have to do things to give more flexibility. I'd actually be interested in, because Jarvis Landry's a very good blocker, I'd be interested to see them put him on the end a little bit more, or put him in the backfield in this pistol formation and have Lamar Miller and Jarvis Landry and use Jarvis Landry as a ball carrier. Because we've all seen, I mean, you know, you hand the ball off to Landry, he's getting you at least 6 yards.
So, yeah, you do that. I could see that, but you think that's something they would do? I mean, all this talk about risking Jarvis Landry not even wanting to do him on kickoffs, I just kind of not envision them really going that route, even though I'm not saying it's a horrible idea at this point.
No, I think
you got to figure out something, but
they won't put him in the backfield. That's me wishing that we had a crazier coach, but they will definitely, I think, shift him over the line and let him do some pretty strong blocking, because he's probably even better than, you know, like Jordan Cameron as a blocker. I mean, Jarvis Landry, it's obviously partially because of that heart that he has that he plays with.
Yeah.
He blocks through the whistle every time. You know, we all love it. We see vines of it every week after the game. Landry going straight through the whistle, blocking dudes to the ground. Absolutely love it. And, you know, especially after what we saw from Mike Wallace, who was hesitant to block his own shadow.
Yes.
I mean, it's great to see Jarvis Landry blocking the way he does, and I think it could be a huge asset against Buffalo.
All I know is I'm going to skin Lazor if I see him continuously going five wide or going even four wide and then just taking the back out too and not giving Tannehill some extra help. Even if it's just a nudge, a shoulder, a bump, it doesn't necessarily have to mean leaving them in, but
no
something.
One's gonna no one believes our play action right now.
Why would we?
Oh, it's and the
why
would they? Ball.
It's pointless. And then especially when you do it on 3rd and 15 and stupid crap like that, when you've run the ball for 7 yards on 20 attempts and 3.5 quarters.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm exaggerating again, but still,
right.
I mean, come on.
I would be very interested to see Bill Lazor's play calling, because the Dolphins, I'm writing an article about this now that'll be up tonight, actually. I'm doing a piece about five, you know, true and false rumors or things that people are saying about the Dolphins right now. And one of them is that the coaches are making adjustments. People are saying, oh, the coaches aren't coming in with good game plans, but they're adjusting at halftime. They're really not. And the most guilty of that's Lazor. And
that's for sure.
It's Lazor, if Joe Philbin is fired this year and Lazor goes, because there's no way we're keeping Lazor if Philbin goes.
No, they all go. All of them.
Right, they all go. It's all or nothing. Lazor will always, Dolphins fans will always owe Bill Lazor something for developing Ryan Tannehill. Because Tannehill was just awful with Mike Sherman. I mean, just because Sherman ran that stupid offense. But we will always owe Bill Lazor for, one, the scheme he did, because we have all of our personnel. We're a pretty fast and young team because of Bill Lazor. I mean, we are really built for success.
Mm-hmm.
Roster wise, outside of the offensive line, that offense is ready to go.
I agree. That's for sure.
Tight end, running back,
skill position. It's a skill position, right, of the offense. We are a very good team. We just suffer in the trenches, specifically the O-line.
And then, so yeah, Bill Lazor will have a lasting reputation in Miami for having developed Ryan Tannehill very well. And he's great on the whiteboard. I mean, he schemes well, but he's not a play caller. That's not what he did in Philadelphia. You know, he was the quarterback's coach. And then the problem is, if your offensive coordinator isn't a play caller, your head coach has to be a play caller. And Joe Philbin never called plays. No, Mike McCarthy called the plays for the Packers while Joe Philbin was there.
Yep.
And so we don't have a play caller on offense. Kevin Coyle is not a play caller either, but, you know, defensive play calling is a whole different game.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive play calling is more about matchups. I guess so is offensive play calling. But when you're really breaking it down, the Dolphins' defensive play calling isn't that abysmal. It's sometimes how far off they play in coverage, which, Ron, I know you and I have both expressed a lot of dissatisfaction for. And it's that Kevin Coyle is a secondary coach by trade. So I want to see if Kevin Coyle, this weekend against Buffalo, can lock down Percy Harvin, can work on defending Sammy Watkins, and can get the linebackers ready to go in coverage, because this is one of the biggest problems the Dolphins are going to face on Sunday: Tyrod Taylor and the play action. The Buffalo Bills have two viable running backs.
Mm-hmm.
LeSean McCoy is obviously one of the shiftiest runners in the league, and he's going to give the Dolphins fits.
Yes, the way we've been stopping the run, for sure.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, you know, do you remember a few years ago when the Dolphins played the Eagles, when Mike Vick was moving out of the pocket?
Yes.
And getting us? That's what we're going to see. We're going to see Tyrod Taylor move out of the pocket and really try to push the ball. And I think Brent Grimes will be okay. You know, Brent Grimes has done pretty well against Sammy Watkins. He had one game where he gave up like 6 or 8 receptions to Sammy Watkins last year. But, I mean, they were really short passes. He had like, he might have had like 100 yards on 8 catches.
Yeah.
But, and one of them was a huge play. One of them was like a 50-yarder, 40-yarder. But in the other game in Buffalo, Sammy Watkins was shut down by Grimes.
Yes.
I think Grimes can handle his business. And I don't think you need to put Rashad Jones helping out Brent Grimes. I think Walt Akins can help out Brent Grimes, because Brent Grimes doesn't need all that much help.
I think I see where you're going with this, because it's exactly what I'm thinking, if I see where you're going with it.
Rashad Jones has to do two things. He has to come down and play linebacker almost on a lot of plays.
Well, we've had no choice because they have two good linebackers.
We took it from New England. We took it from New England. They do it with Patrick Chung all the time.
Yeah,
they play
we're using our safety like a linebacker in a way.
Right. And that's okay the way Rashad Jones has been playing. Hell, I'd rather have him at linebacker than Kelvin Shepard. But the Dolphins cannot leave Jamar Taylor and Bryce McCain on an island if they're rushing four. Against the Jaguars, there were at least 2 or 3 plays where the Dolphins had 4 men rushing. If you have 4 men rushing, they have more plays than that, but if you have 4 men rushing and a corner on an island, something is wrong.
Yes.
You know, if you're only rushing 4 men, you have extra guys to commit in coverage.
Correct.
So what the Miami Dolphins need to do is they need to find a better way to allocate between their safeties and their blitzing, and find a happy balance, because right now neither is doing anything, because they'll blitz and then they'll have no coverage, or they won't blitz and they'll still have no coverage.
Yes.
And I mean, Walt Akins, I'm ready to split reps between he and Michael Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the benefits of playing a young guy, and I know I'm a hypocrite because I always bash Kevin Coyle for
this, yeah.
but I think right now it makes sense to split reps. I know. Cause I mean, Kelvin Shepard is the worst player on this team's defense, and it's not close. Kelvin Shepard is an abysmal linebacker. He has been a career backup for a reason. He got the job over Zach Vigil, and I'm not saying Zach Vigil will be better, but there's no chance he's worse.
I agree.
And the linebacking core is not the issue as a whole. There's another piece for the article that's coming out tonight if anyone is interested in linebacker play. Mm-hmm. Jelani Jenkins and Koa Meese have actually played well, especially Jelani Jenkins. He's been the biggest surprise this year. I mean, we knew Rashad Jones was good, so him being the best player on the defense isn't a surprise. It's a huge surprise, because we knew, like, he's a complete baller.
Yes.
But it's really surprising to see how well Jelani Jenkins has played. mostly in coverage. You know, it's good to see him progressing in a linear way. So I think he's going to play a big role against Buffalo, because the whole thing with LeSean McCoy is if you let him get into the second level, you're done. If he gets past Jelani Jenkins, Koh Meese, and I don't even want to say Kelvin Shepard's name, if he gets past those guys, off to the races. Mm-hmm. I mean, impossible to tackle him in the open field. So,
especially for the Dolphins, because we're just not a great tackling team. We have quite a few players who are not good tacklers, I should say.
I think I don't predict a Dolphins win. I've said that. But I predict Rashad Jones to have 3 or 4 tackles for loss. I mean, I think Rashad Jones is going to be all over the field. This is his opportunity. Rex Ryan said it this week. He said Rashad Jones is playing out of his mind. It's not the exact quote, but he was heaping pretty heavy praise onto Rashad Jones. And I'm going to be excited to see how he plays.
I'm excited to see how he plays. Obviously, he helps the team. If we could get our players, our team off the snide, man, would he be a centerpiece, in essence, of what could be a decent defense. I've lost my dreams right now of this being a top 2, 3, 4, 5 defense. I will just take trying to get into a number 10 spot right now. Honestly,
no, I'm not there yet. I'm not quite there yet. I mean, I think it's a new unit, and all we need is Sue to just turn it on. And once he does turn it on, then I think everyone gets better, like we all said. You know, we weren't wrong when we said that. What we said was Ndamukong Suh is going to help make everyone better. Well, Ndamukong Suh hasn't been good, so we haven't gotten a chance to see that. Ndamukong Suh gets used to the system more, the whole defense gets better. This is a huge opportunity for him to do that and to get better and to show. You know, he's going to want to, because he's playing against the top defensive line. This was a marquee matchup defensively heading into the season. Mm-hmm. And Sue's a showman. He likes putting on a show. You've seen what he does. He likes it. And I think this is a big opportunity for him to put on a show.
Yeah, I agree. I would think with the amount of pride that he has, he would start to figure this thing out. I want to get to the Sue thing. As far as the conversation about him kind of going off script in the playing and whatnot. But before we do that, I just want to kind of talk about something. I don't obviously write very many articles because I don't have my own website. But I was able to write one, I think, about a month and a half ago. And I mentioned some secondary players, or what I considered players that were not the stars, like Sue, Tannehill, Pouncey, Landry, guys like that, that I felt like are really going to be what makes the difference for this team. Now, mind you, many of our stars have not played like stars, and that's been part of the biggest part of the problem. But some of those players I mentioned, and I think I named about 6, were Jenkins, Jones, Sims, and Rashard Matthews. So so it's just interesting that you could see the talent from those guys, that they were going to be strong players. Yeah, I just thought they were going to be strong players within a sea of stronger players, and I felt like that's why we were going to be so good. Instead, those guys have been our strongest players, and some of the ones who we thought were going to be the stars, especially Sue, Wake, you know, guys like that, have really let us down some this season. So I just think it's interesting. Those guys are still shining the way we hoped they would, just hasn't been working out on a whole, you know, as a whole, the way we hoped it would.
It's really, really tough seeing the burden that's put on all the other players right now because of a few guys underperforming. I don't really blame Wake for it. I mean, Wake is getting old. I mean, Wake's getting up there. And Sue just, it's all about him. It's all about him turning it on. And I know it's unpleasant for Dolphins fans to talk about, but he's looked more like Albert Haynesworth than he has Reggie White.
You're right, man. The Albert Haynesworth name popped into my head once over the past week, and I immediately kicked it right out of my head. I refuse to think that way right now.
I really don't think it's that, because Sue was exponentially better than Albert Haynesworth was when he signed with the Redskins.
For sure.
But I think Dolphins fans also are guilty because of the sports culture in Miami. I think there are a lot of casual Dolphins fans who just expect Sue to be able to jump in and just do it. I think a lot of people need to kind of dial it back and take a second and realize he's learning a whole new system. This is the first time he's had to pick up a new defense. I mean, he picked a new defense up when he came to Detroit, and now he's trying to learn another one, and it's different. He was, you know, he's learning to play with other stars because he's playing with Cameron Wake, and he's playing with Vernon. You know, it's kind of like when LeBron came to Miami, he had to learn to play in the new system with good players. People kind of said, oh, what are the Heat doing when they were, you know, not playing well the first year? And then all of a sudden it clicked and the teamwork was there. I think that's what it's going to take for the Dolphins. It's going to take a while for it to click. And, you know, same thing happened. If you remember, people didn't want Spoelstra.
Yes.
Because they felt he couldn't utilize the talent in the same way that people feel about Coyle and Philbin now. So you can kind of take a step back and say, okay, I understand what's happening here. Based on that, when you have the best player at their position, well, LeBron is the best player in the world, but when they come in and they have to learn to play with other talented individuals, Sue was always the most talented person on that defense. He's the most talented person on the Dolphins defense, but that Dolphins defensive line is better than any group he played with in Detroit.
I don't understand why that's harder to adjust to. I think if it's anything, it's a scheme thing.
Right, it's a scheme thing, but it's a new scheme. I mean, any new scheme takes time, regardless of what you're doing. I mean, so you, like, know, you see all the time, players don't just hop in as free agents and just do it. I mean,
yeah, I got you. I understand what you're saying. Let's talk a little bit about those rumors that Sue was kind of just doing his own thing out there, going rogue, off book, whatever you want to call it. What do you make of those rumors? And that's exactly what they are rumors. They're not necessarily substantiated or factual at all.
I don't believe you should be coaching Ndamukong Suh, to be completely honest. I think if he's freelancing in terms of where he's rushing, then that's good because he has the ability to do that. He has the ability to determine where he should rush. If it's him saying, I don't want to drop back into coverage, well, good for him, because they shouldn't be dropping him back into coverage.
No.
So either way, I think either it – and honestly, Sue's going to be here longer than Kevin Coyle at this point. So
very likely at this pace, many years longer.
We have him. The way his contract is structured, for those who don't know, it is literally impossible to move on from him. No other team would take this contract. It's structured specifically to work with Tannehill and Pouncey's deals. We have the three of them for a very, very long time.
You know, but we could move on from Tannehill in 2 years if we wanted to.
3 years.
He can't move on from us, but we can move on from him. Sue's a different story, though. He's ours. He's ours, we're his, and that's that.
I don't think we're going to want to move on from Tannehill because
No, I don't want to. He's been playing the best the entire season's been two games. He's been the best player on our team this season for sure.
Except for maybe Rashad Jones, but, you know, Tannehill's really playing in spite of the coaching and in spite of the offensive line. Tannehill's playing better than everyone else on that offense.
Oh, for sure. And the only other one close is Landry.
Me and Jarvis Landry have got such good chemistry. We have Jarvis Landry for like 5 years. We have him for, I guess, three more years. But we have to accept that Ndamukong Suh is who he is. He is going to rush. He's going to decide where he rushes. And to be honest, if the Dolphins defensive linemen rushed because we need more pressure. And we need to use Sue's versatility more. I wrote about in an article this week, I think the Dolphins need to consider at least shifting every once in a while into a 3-4 defense. You know, if Wake or Vernon decided to stand up and run the linebacker, Sue could shift over and play nose tackle. He can do that. He can occupy blockers.
For sure.
He can play nose tackle. Or he could play defensive end. You can play any position on that line. So I think the team needs to just find a creative way, much like I was saying earlier about the rushing attack. The defense needs to find a creative way to get pressure. Because if they can't get pressure, there's just nothing's there for this year.
No, it's true. I mean, there's a whole reason, well, beyond the run stuffing.
At this point, I mean, it would be so unpleasant for a new coach to come in if this defense continues performing the way it has. Because they'd move on from Vernon and they move on from Wake. And then this whole dominant defensive line thing would be done.
Well, I mean, then you're going to go with Fide, who could really develop. I'd say for sure.
I think then a top two, a top, you know, early draft pick becomes a defensive end.
Dude, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to take all my podcast equipment and throw it in the freaking river if we don't go get a damn linebacker. I am so sick of this crap. I am so sick of not having a linebacker. They have tried to get a middle linebacker every freaking offseason. They have quietly tried to sneak one in.
I'm very convinced that we were going to select Denzel Perryman in the second round this year, but the San Diego Chargers jumped us in the second round and took Perryman.
And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, we didn't get Shazier, and we didn't get, why do I always forget his name? Mosley, that went to Baltimore, and we didn't get DeQuell Jackson, and there was another free agent 2 years ago we didn't get. And it's just one reason or another, don't ever end up with a linebacker. And it's obvious a position we need, and we need to go get one. I don't care what they spend on. I don't care if they spend the third overall pick. Get a freaking linebacker. I'm so sick of this crap.
Let's not talk about linebackers with the third overall pick, but back to the Bills. Linebacker is going to be an issue for the Dolphins because Tyrod Taylor is going to get out of the pocket. I think that's going to be a huge mismatch. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what to expect really on the defensive side of the ball. On offense, I know we're going to have to run better, and we're going to have to run to the left side, because if we run at Mario Williams, I'm going to be a very, very sad person.
Well, here's the thing, though. To run at Mario Williams, you have to do what? Run. We got lasers, so you don't have to worry about that.
I don't mind not running in a situation if we haven't, because I put a little bit of the blame on Lamar Miller. I don't know that he's been playing as well as he could.
It's so hard to know. We've given up on the run. We've seen him run it 3.5 times once. We haven't opened up holes. We haven't blocked well. Obviously, Miller hasn't run great. I mean, it's been a combination of everything, and we keep just telling Tannehill, hey, go bail us out, would you? We can't run the ball. We can't block for the run. We can't block for the pass. Here, you do something with it. You and the receivers, have at it. I mean, that's just been it. That's the problem right now. That is our offense in a nutshell. We're just giving it to Tannehill, say, we're not going to give you much protection, and we're not going to give you a running game, but you and these wide receivers just going to have to, and you know, and Jordan Cameron is going to have to figure it out for us. Could you do that? We appreciate it. Thanks, guy. You're the man. I think that's what we paid you for.
I think one last note that I have to offer about the Buffalo matchup is that Jordan Cameron's going to have a huge day. You know, there's half a fantasy announcement, half a real football announcement, because the Buffalo Bills defense we saw last week gave up a lot of passing yards. Right now, I guarantee you, Bill Lazor and Ryan Tannehill are sitting there in Davey watching the Patriots tape and saying, how'd they get that slot receiver out there for 10 catches and how'd they get the tight end open? I'm not saying that Jordan Cameron can do what Gronk does, but I'm saying that they need to look at that game plan and say, we need to get the ball a lot to our slot receiver, Jarvis Landry, and we need to get the, like New England did with Julian Edelman, and we need to get the ball a lot. I think if that happens, then we might be in decent shape.
What's your prediction on the game?
It's a really tough one. I mean, it's going to be as close as a game and as important of a game as we've had in a long time, home opener. And I think we come out with a lot of energy in the home opener. It's going to be so close, and unfortunately, I think it's going to come down to what it usually does, which is Ryan Tannehill trying not to get sacked on the last drive of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But my final prediction is 21-17 Bills.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking around that same area, somewhere around 24-17, 24-20. Unfortunately, I really want
the Dolphins
to win.
But the Dolphins could come out and knock them dead. The Dolphins, who knows this early in the season. I compare it to a college team going into conference play after playing two non-conference games. Like, you never know what you're going to see.
Yeah, that's true. It is conference play, but I have said coming into the season before we saw how things started to go that I felt that home opener for Miami, they were going to flip the script on Buffalo. I've said it tons of times. If you listen to this podcast, you're hearing me repeat myself. You want to flip the script on Buffalo, and we're going to be the energetic ones. But then we have, of course, two players on Buffalo that's playing against us that have a thorn in their side, have a bone to pick.
I don't think Charles Clay has a thorn in his side. I really don't think so. Charles Clay was nothing but positive in Miami and had a good experience. the Dolphins tried to keep him but could not.
Not for that price.
I think that's a mutual understanding. I think that's as amiable as a split can be.
Okay, that's fair.
But Richie Incognito is going to be a mean, mean man.
Yeah, the only thing about it, if any position was going to have a quote-unquote bone to pick with us, as I said, the guard position is the one I'm least worried about.
Well, if Richie Incognito wants to pick a bone with the dude who's lining up across from him, then go for it.
I agree.
With that guy. Watch what happens.
I agree, but it's just every week it's that. And I've had on the Next Fan Up podcast, I saw this also mentioned by the Buffalo fan about that. And I was like, you know what? Last week it was Audric. This week it's Incognito. Next week it's Todd Bowles. Whatever. Every week it's some player coming against us who has some reason to be, totally motivated to play the Dolphins. Right. Everybody has a chip on their shoulder in the NFL for some reason, whether they think they were, some people say they were overdrafted, underdrafted, not drafted, whatever. They all play with chips on their shoulders. It's just, it is what it is. It's the NFL. I'm not going to get myself too excited about it. I'm less worried about it having effect on the game and more I get tired of hearing about it. I get tired of hearing about, oh, Audric. And then, of course, they put Fox in and Audric goes off. Dude, you weren't doing crap before then. I don't want to hear it. So you picked on Fox. Well, Fox is kind of not very good. So whatever. Congratulations. You know what I mean? Congratulations. Yep. It's just one of those things. I do want to ask you, though, a little bit. What are you thinking about the Jets? Like, are they for
I'm
real?
I'm not thinking too much.
No, you're not? You're not buying
that.
It.
I'm thinking more about the Colts. I mean, what's up with that? I mean, I like to look at the schedule 1 week at a time a little bit and just kind of like not worry about the next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if I'm looking at the Dolphins schedule, the toughest team on our schedule, in my opinion, are the Patriots and Bills.
Yes.
Those are the two toughest teams we have to play. The Bills, not because they're an amazing team, just because they match up so well with us. But, I mean, the Eagles look very mortal. Romo and Bryant won't be back by the time we play the Cowboys. The Ravens have looked worse than we thought they would. The Giants look like garbage.
Colts.
The Colts are 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we thought that the Colts-Patriots stretch was going to be hard. I'm more worried about the Chargers and Patriots games now than I am about the Colts-Giants. I mean, even the Ravens, because I don't know. I'm really, really mostly concerned about the Bills. I don't know about the Jets. Like I think a lot of the times you see these new coaches come out and light it up in their first few games, and then they start back down to earth, much like Chip Kelly is right now.
Man, is he crashing back to earth right now? I have no idea what's going on with that team. I'm even surprised, even though I've sat here and people have heard me said, if any team I've talked about or any coach I've talked about beyond Dolphins and beyond Philbin, it's been the Eagles and Chip Kelly religiously on this podcast. And I've knocked Chip Kelly. I've knocked his system. I've said it's kind of a little bit of a one-trick pony, even though that pony has many levels to it. I still kind of feel it is. But even with that, I am really surprised by the way Philly looked. I mean, it was midway, almost to the end of the third quarter, and Philly had 0 points against Dallas. Unreal.
The Jets games do not scare me that much. Philbin, if he's lost life against the Jets, he's only lost once.
It's always at the end of the season. That's what he lives against the Jets.
But I mean, this year, our stretch at the end of the schedule looks easier than it did coming into the season, but we are only in week two. Right now, if I had to rank the teams I'm most scared of, it's number one, the Bills, because they're just such a wild card. And we play them badly. The reason the Patriots aren't the scariest team for me is because I know we play them well.
For whatever reason, we just do.
Right, exactly. Then the next scariest team is probably the Chargers on that schedule, then the Colts. Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent on a lot of these teams that are underperforming, and hopefully the Dolphins can take advantage of it. But it all starts this Sunday. This Sunday's the turning point. This Sunday, unfortunately, it didn't come later in season. You know, I thought our turning point, I thought we'd be a little bit shaky heading into, I thought the turning point for our season would be the Thursday night football game against the Patriots if we could challenge them. But right now, I'm just looking at getting a win against Buffalo. I mean,
Because you didn't expect a loss against Jacksonville.
No, I did not. No, I did not.
I don't think anybody did.
But Jackson, that's a trap game. And the Redskins have played better than we initially thought. So in a perfect world, we started off slow against the Redskins but won. The Jaguars were a trap game. And in a perfect world, we come out and ball against the Bills. And it seems like the players were pretty pissed about Sunday too. So it seems like they're probably going to be ready to seriously come out there and put some fire on it. But I'm not sure. I mean, it's very hard to predict.
Let's say we get the win against Buffalo. And I'm feeling, I don't know, even though I just said, are the Jets for real, not for real? We seem to play well in London. We seem to play Jets well opening, you know, first game we play them in the season. Let's say we turn that corner and we can get these two next division wins. Do we start to calm down regardless of how ugly it looks?
Let's measure everything as what's going to happen by the time we get to the Patriots, which is, you know, I think it's week 8 or week 9. So we have our bye week.
I think it's week 8, I believe.
Looking at our schedule, if we win on Sunday, I think we beat the Jets, Titans, and Texans, and I think we head into that last stretch, like 4-1.
Okay.
But if we lose to the Bills, I don't know. I think I don't know. It's really hard. The team doesn't have a lot of home games early on.
I think our game, this sounds crazy. I know this sounds nuts, if I'm not mistaken. December 7th against Baltimore is like our third home game, like actually at home. I'm pretty sure I have that right.
First is the Sunday, then our next is against the Texans, that's two.
Mm-hmm.
Our third home game is November 22nd against the Cowboys.
Okay.
Yeah, then our fourth home game is the Ravens.
Yeah, that's insane. Fourth home game, December 7th. That's nuts. I mean, that's crazy. There's another – we think we've had a bad on the road. There's a three-game road stretch we have in the season.
And two of the games are divisional. We have the Patriots and Bills.
Yeah, that's our schedule was – I mean, as far as home and road, is like the most screwed-looking schedule I've ever seen in my life. I don't know why they did that or why it worked out that way, but it really was very weird. But if we can get through it with a decent record, even though we're playing what we at least thought were some tough teams at the end – you know, but this game, this Bills game is, like you said, it's a turning point. It has to be. Like, we can't be 1-2, man. We can't be 1-2. I'm sorry, and I'm a little nervous about the Jets. I think we can beat them, but I'm still, I mean, it's not like it's a, I'm going to put it to you this way, it's not an easy gimme game, that's for sure. There is no gimme game in the NFL, especially for the Dolphins.
No, it's still a hard matchup. I mean, it's not a definitive game. That is what it is. I mean, I think we're just going to have to wait till Sunday and find out.
Yeah, I guess so. Anything else before we wrap it up, man? You want to give us some plugs there?
Nothing. Yeah, it's up on Twitter at The Deep End Miami. Always have everything during the games. Have some more articles coming out before the game against the Bills. And, like us on Facebook at The Deep End Miami. Also, thedeependmiami.com for the articles. And we appreciate having me on again.
Hey, yeah, thanks for coming on, man. As far as for me, obviously, I am Ron. You can reach me on Twitter at UnsquishTheFish. I will be doing my second live broadcast of the Dolphins games. I'll be doing the Dolphins-Bills game through Rabble.tv. I'll have that link up very shortly by tonight, actually, on my Twitter page right there on the main page, so you can see it. I'll be tweeting that out throughout the weekend and lots Sunday morning, so look for that as well. You can also find me on the Next Fan Up podcast, hosted by Pod Vader, and I am the Dolphins representative there. If you'd like to email the show, you may do it at unsquishthefish@gmail.com. Thank you very much for catching this Bills preview. Be back again with a Sunday night recap of the Bills game. Thanks a lot.